Thank you, everyone, for being here this afternoon. We have so many blessings that we can count. I'm thankful for Paul leading that song, getting our minds centered on how many blessings we have. And one of those is that we get to be here today and we get to talk more about God. I know that you heard a fantastic lesson this morning from Mr. Simon, and I'm thankful that he was able to be here and to talk to us. I'm thankful for the meeting last week and for all the encouragement that Brother Jared was able to bring to us. I'm thankful for the prayer that Brother Denny led and for him focusing on asking God to help us continue here at Overland to stand for the truth. And what a blessing it is that we have so many here who are willing to support the gospel and to stand for the truth. This afternoon, for a little bit, we're going to talk about acting like her. Now, in the Bible, there are so many examples of female characters that we can imitate. Think about Deborah. Think about Mary. Think about all of these female characters that are important for us to follow. And many, many great lessons can be learned by looking at her example, in the sense of looking at a female figure. Go to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17, we're going to read a couple verses here and then talk about acting like her based on this passage. Exodus chapter 17, and begin with me in verse 8. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Okay, let's stop there in verse 11 and talk about this for a moment. So a little bit of context about what is going on in Exodus chapter 17. If you go back just a couple chapters in your Bible, then you'll run into the story of the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. So the nation of Israel has been slaves in Egypt for many, many years. They've grown into a great nation while in Egypt. And this great nation has a promise from God that God gave to one of their early ancestors, Abraham. God promised that he would give them a land to live in. And so now this great nation needs to get to this promised land that God has given to them. And so God delivers them out of Egypt. They cross the Red Sea, and the Red Sea comes back on the Egyptians. But right after they cross the Red Sea, they start running into some problems. In chapter 16, the Israelites complain about not having enough food. And then in chapter 17, the passage that we just read, there's the Amalekites that want to come fight against them just after they've gotten out of Egypt. That's a pretty big problem. There's this army coming against you. So Moses delegates the responsibility to Joshua. Joshua becomes a very prominent leader later on in the story of the Israelites. But Joshua, he's in charge of defeating the Amalekites. And so he gathers together this force, and Moses is up on a hill watching the battle take place. So Moses is on a hill watching this battle, and they find out, as we read in verse 11, that if Moses holds his hands up in the air, then the Israelites are winning the battle. But if Moses puts his hands down, then the Amalekites start winning the battle. Now that wasn't just some fluke of nature. This is clearly God in control of the battle. God is the one controlling whether or not Israel will win. And God has made it to where if Moses holds his hands up in the air, then the Israelites will win this battle. So continue reading in verse 12. But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So Joshua is standing up on this hill and he's holding his hands up in the air. And if you ever do an experiment, we did some of these going through high school. If you hold a book out for a little bit, it's not that hard. I mean, you can do this for a while, but eventually your arm starts getting tired and the book starts feeling heavier. It's the same kind of thing. Moses is holding his hands up in the air and he starts getting tired, as anyone would as they're watching this battle. And so because he's getting tired, Aaron and Hur are there to help him. So they take this rock and they put it underneath him for him to sit on. And then one gets on one side and the other gets on the other side. And they literally hold his arms in the air so that Israel can win. And verse 13 tells us that Joshua and the Israelites, they end up winning the battle because of that. So as we talk about acting like her, following her example, we're actually going to be looking at this man here in Exodus chapter 17. His name is Hur. He was an Israelite along the time of Moses. And now Hur is a very, very minor character. Hur is mentioned right here and in one other place in the book of Exodus. And then he's mentioned, his sons are mentioned a little bit later. But that's it. Twice in the book of Exodus. And we're going to look at another example in just a couple minutes in Exodus chapter 24. So what can we learn from such an obscure character? What part of his character can we act like? And I think that as we see how he was acting, we can take a few lessons away, even though he's such a minor character. The first lesson that I want us to take away is that we can support godly people. In fact, we need to be supporting godly people. Think about her as he is the example for us to follow. And I'm going to say her and him a lot. Don't get confused. Her is the character that we're looking at. Think about his example in this way. He was supporting a godly person, literally holding up Moses' arms as Moses is there winning the battle for the Israelites. Without Aaron and her supporting Moses, the battle could have been lost. Now, we don't know that for sure. But without Moses and Aaron there, Moses wouldn't have had the support that he needed. And it is very crucial that we follow Hur's example in this. That we look to him as a model of someone who supported people who were serving God. There's a lot of ways that we can do that. There are many ways that each one of us can support godly people. It goes way further than supporting a preacher. That's part of it. That's important. But it goes a lot further than that. Godly people need support. Think about Elijah. Elijah, as he was serving God in the midst of a very evil and corrupt nation, he got to the point where he was discouraged and he felt like he was alone. He felt like there was no one else serving God. He didn't have any support, he felt like. Now, we find out later, God actually had 5,000 people still ready to serve God. So Elijah's feelings weren't accurate. But he was starting to feel discouraged, to feel like there wasn't any support for him. People who are striving to serve God need support. That's why we're given each other to lean on. Each one of us is trying to serve God. We're each trying to have godly character as we go about our week. So each one of us needs support. Which as a result of that means that each one of us needs to give support. We need to get underneath each other. If someone is taking a stand for truth against a coworker, we can help them with that. Practical help, giving them advice, or even going with them to talk to this person. If someone is studying the Bible with a group of people or an individual, that's a godly person trying to spread the gospel. We need to get behind that. We need to support that. If someone's making an effort to have others into their home, again, we can get behind that. We can support that as others are trying to serve God. The ways are endless in how we can support godly people, but it's important that we follow Hur's example. Go to Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2. I want to look at the example of Rahab. Now, Rahab is one of those characters where there's some good and there's some bad, like most characters in the Bible. And a lot of times as we talk about Rahab, we sometimes focus on how she was a harlot and on how she lied. And those things were very evil things. Those aren't good. We're not trying to minimize that. But I want to look at Rahab as a positive example of someone who supported godly people. So in the book of Joshua, Joshua is taking over the Promised Land after Moses has died. And so as they cross the Jordan River, as they begin to cross the Jordan River, they need to send spies ahead to look at the Promised Land. And so Joshua, he sends some spies into Jericho, the first city that they're going to come to. Joshua chapter 2, start with me in verse 1. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went, and they came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. Okay, so these spies that Joshua sent come into Rahab's house. That's where they end up staying. Pick up in verse 2. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So the king of Jericho sent Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country." Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from." And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Now stop in verse 6. Rahab has the king of Jericho sent people to her house, or come to her house. Think about that authority figure coming to you. And so the king of Jericho asks her if she knew where these two men were. And Rahab lied and said, "I don't know where they are." This is not good. We should not justify Rahab's actions here. She lied to the king of Jericho, and that was a very bad thing to do. But I want to notice in the following verses why she was willing to take these people in at much risk to herself. Verse 8, "Now therefore they lay down," talking about the spies, "and she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath.'" So we find out Rahab was willing to support these godly spies because she recognized who God was. She recognized that the God that they were serving was the true God, the God of heaven and earth. So Rahab, she supported these godly people. Now, as we talk about supporting godly people, there have to be dozens of examples that we could look at of that. So you might be asking, why would you go to Rahab? I wanted to use Rahab to help each one of us realize a very important fact. Rahab made mistakes. Yes, she was supporting godly people, but she made mistakes even as she was doing it. But that wasn't an excuse. She still supported these godly people who came into her house. So there's a lesson in that for us. Even if we, as we recognize that we make mistakes, that we aren't perfect, that we can't do everything, that doesn't remove the responsibility. We still need to be supporting godly people. We still need to be finding ways that we can do that, pushing through those obstacles, and hopefully improving as we do that. So Rahab, she took a risk to support godly people. She ends up being very rewarded because of that. Later on, she is saved when they actually destroy Jericho. Her and all of her household are saved from physical death. But then later in the Bible, in Hebrews chapter 11, where all of these characters of faith are talked about, Rahab is mentioned, and her faith is talked about. She supported godly people, even though she had a bad history and even though she made mistakes. And we can take a very powerful lesson from that. Also, think about Peter, just real quick. Peter, he had an opportunity to support a very godly person. Peter was there as Jesus lived on this earth. Peter was very close to Jesus. But on the night that Jesus was in the garden as he was betrayed, all the disciples fled when Jesus was taken as a prisoner. Now Peter, he follows at a distance behind Jesus, and he comes to this situation where he's in the courtyard and he sees Jesus being tried. And someone comes to him and asks him, "Are you with Jesus? Aren't you one of those people who's with him?" Peter, he had an opportunity to support Jesus, to support the most godly person that was ever here on this earth. And what did he say? He said, "I don't know the man." He denied this opportunity to support a godly person. So there's good examples and there's also very poor examples. We need to choose the right ones to follow. And Rahab is important to us because we see that even in mistakes, we can still be serving God and supporting those that do. We need to follow her example in this area. Also, Hur in Exodus chapter 17, remember back to the story, Hur was the person who rose to meet the need. Now, as Moses goes up on this hill, there would have been lots and lots of people who could have gone and held Moses' hands up. There's no doubt about that. Any number of people could have done that. But Hur is the one that goes up there with Aaron and Moses. He saw a need and he took the responsibility. He didn't shy away from it. He didn't hide from it. He saw a need and he decided to be the one to rise to the occasion. Now, we don't know a whole lot about his background, why he was the one there. But he was the one who took action. He saw that someone had a need and he met it. When a need comes up for us today, it is so easy for us to wait, to let someone else jump in and have the opportunity. Now, I'm not saying every opportunity that a need arises, we need to be the first one jumping on it in a prideful way. That's not the right attitude. But we do need to be people who are very eager to meet needs that other people have, to see the need and then to go take care of it for them. We can be the one who jumps in on that need, who helps the people who need something. When I was growing up, we would always clean up after meals, lunch or supper, and those kids would pitch in and we would clean off the tables or wipe the tables or load the dishwasher, wash the dishes, those kind of things. And I hated washing the dishes. It was my least favorite job. And so Levi can attest to this. As we would begin to clean up the kitchen, I would go to my room for about 10 minutes, do something really important. And by that time, someone else had volunteered to wash the dishes, and I didn't have to do it. There was a need, and instead of jumping on the need, I ran away and hid for as long as I could until someone else took care of it. Now, that's a silly example, but we can do the same thing with very important needs. We can be waiting, just hoping someone else does it so we don't have to. It's not a good attitude. When we see the need, we need to jump on it. We need to be ready to take advantage of that. What about a couple examples? Go to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4, Paul, of course, is writing to the church in Philippi. And Philippians chapter 4, or the book of Philippians, is such an encouraging book. Just as a little side note, if you want to get to know the Bible better, here's one very simple way that you can do that. Pick the book of Philippians and just read through the book every day. It'll take you maybe 15 minutes every morning to read through the book of Philippians. That's a great way to just start getting into the Bible more. The book of Philippians has so many practical things for us to learn from. But anyway, Philippians chapter 4, Paul here is writing to the church in Philippi, and he has something very encouraging to say to them in verse 15. He says, "Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities." So what's Paul saying here? Paul's writing to the church in Philippi, and he is thankful for them. He tells them they were the ones who met his need. Now here, Paul is writing about receiving financial support so that he can continue preaching the gospel. And he tells the Philippians they were the ones who met this financial need that he had. Now it is a fantastic thing and a blessing when a church can support preachers. That's fantastic. And Overland is a group that's blessed to do that with a lot of different men. We saw an example of that this morning. But the point goes much deeper than that. The church in Philippi, the individuals there, were willing to help Paul, to meet his need. Notice how he words it in verse 16. "You sent aid once and again for my necessities." This is support that Paul needed. The church in Philippi, they were the ones who rose to the occasion and met the need. And especially in verse 16, he mentions that he's in Thessalonica while they're doing this. So Paul's in another city, but the church in Philippi is still helping him, still sending him support so that he can preach the gospel. If there was ever an opportunity for the church in Philippi to find an excuse to not help Paul, to not meet his need, this would have been it. Think about how easy it would have been for them to say, "Well, he left Philippi and went to Thessalonica. We don't need to help him anymore." That's not what they do. They realize Paul still has a need. They still want to be the ones to meet his need. And that's what they do. They rise to the occasion, they see a need, and they jump on it. They don't wait for someone else to do that. Let's go to Matthew chapter 25 next. Matthew chapter 25. As I was thinking about different examples of people that are described as meeting the needs of others, there's a lot that we can look at. There's a lot of examples. And for all of these points so far, there have been lots of examples. But as I thought about Matthew chapter 25, this was the one that humbled me more than any other. Because here it paints a picture of someone meeting other people's needs, but it shows how important it is. Let's just go ahead and read Matthew chapter 25. Start with me in verse 31. Jesus speaking here. "When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations shall be gathered before Him, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he will set the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on the right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. Stop for a second in verse 34, actually. Jesus speaking, what is he describing here? What scene is he starting to talk about? He's talking about the judgment day. He's talking about the time where he brings the righteous into this kingdom that has been prepared for them. He's talking about the choice on judgment day between heaven and hell. He describes it as separating the sheep and the goats. And so as Jesus begins describing this scene, he starts talking in verse 35 about what kind of people get to inherit eternal life. Verse 35, For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. So as Jesus describes this final judgment scene, separating the sheep from the goats, what kind of people get to go into eternal life, this kingdom that is prepared for them? Verses 35 through 40 describe it as the people who are meeting others' needs. Now, that really humbled me. That really showed me what I need to work on. That really put my failures in perspective. When I failed to help people when they needed something, this is a very important matter. Now, I'm not saying that all there is to serving God is helping people. There is certainly much more than that. But Jesus, as he describes a separation on the judgment day, he says the people who are meeting others' needs, they're the kind of people that get to inherit life. That puts it in a pretty important picture, does it not? We need to be these kind of people. And again, this could be put in any kind of practical sense. Think about any needs that we can meet, financial, emotional, otherwise. This is how important Jesus sees that as. We need to be the ones who meet the need. And we need to follow her's example in that. He saw the need and he rose to the occasion. Lastly, we need to be someone that others can turn to. Go to Exodus chapter 24. I said just a couple minutes ago that we would look at the second time Hur is mentioned in the book of Exodus. He comes up again in Exodus chapter 24. And in Exodus chapter 17, he was just briefly mentioned for a little bit of information. The same thing happens in Exodus chapter 24. We don't really learn anything else about him as far as details, but we do see him in action again. Exodus chapter 24, start with me in verse 12. Then the Lord said to Moses, Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. Now, what scene is being described here? Moses, he is getting ready to go receive the law from God. The Ten Commandments, laws about the tabernacle, laws about conduct. This is what Moses is getting ready to receive. And so he goes up on the mountain with Joshua. And as he does that, in verse 14, he needs to leave some leadership behind. So in verse 14, he said to the elders, Wait here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let them go to them. So as Moses goes up to do this important task for God, he needs to leave some leadership behind. Just in case there's a problem in the camp, he needs to have some people that they can turn to. And as he does that, he chooses Aaron and Hur to be the two people that he leaves behind to help with any kind of problems that arise. So in the congregation of Israel, if two people start fighting and they need some help with that, then they can go to Aaron and Hur. If there's a dispute about cleanliness in the camp, they can go to Aaron and Hur about it. That's what they are there for. They're there to meet the needs of others and to be someone that others can turn to. Now, we already noticed in Exodus chapter 17, Hur is the kind of person that's actively looking for ways to help. But here in Exodus, in Exodus chapter 24, not only is he looking for ways to help, he's also the kind of person that anyone else can come to. And we can understand this in a practical sense. As we look at each other, sometimes we can see needs that need to be met. Someone that needs to be visited, someone that needs food. And we can see those needs and we can go meet them. Sometimes there's needs that we can't see. We don't see all of the needs that each one of us has. And so there's also this willingness that each one of us needs to have to be someone that is approachable, that people can come to. People know that we're willing to help. People know that we're going to handle their situation in a loving way, to not look down on them, to not say mean things, but to accept them and try to help them with the problem that they have, to get it resolved or make whatever changes need to be made. We need to be that kind of person as well. Someone that others know, hey, I can go to that person if I need some help. Now, I'm not saying that we need to be the person for every situation out there. That just can't happen. If someone comes to me looking for marriage advice, I can't give that. I haven't been married. I can point to the Bible. I can point to examples that they could turn to. But I can't help them on that personal level. I can point them somewhere else. But if someone comes to me and they need other ways of help, if they need help learning how to respect their parents, I can help them with that in some ways. Because I've struggled with that. I've failed with that. I've had to improve in that area. There's different ways that each one of us can help. None of us can meet every single need. But each one of us has some needs that we can meet. Each one of us has gone through some situation in life that we can share our experience. Now that takes being open. That takes having some strength to want to help other people and some love for that person. But it's necessary that we do that. And it's very encouraging when there are people like that. I think a lot of you in this audience have been on both sides of this. You've been the person that people can come to if they need help. But you've also had a time in your life where you've needed to go to somebody. Where you've had some situation that you needed help with. You've had some problem that needs to be dealt with. And you know there's someone you can go to get advice, to ask for help. And we need to be those kind of people. Let's look at a couple examples in Proverbs. Go to Proverbs chapter 11, first of all. Proverbs chapter 11, I'm just going to read these verses up on the screen. Proverbs 11, 15, and 24, just to give us a sampling of what Proverbs has to say about this. This is not at all an exhaustive list. You could turn to many others. But this will give us a sample. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 14, first of all. Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 22. Proverbs 15, verse 22. Without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 6. Proverbs 24, 6. For by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety. Now again, this is just kind of a sampling. There's a lot more that Proverbs has to say about this idea. And as I have read these verses over a couple of years, I always go to these verses to tell myself, I need to go find people to help me. This idea of a counselor is just someone that you turn to for help or for guidance. I've always read these verses from the perspective of, I need to go find someone that can help me. Find a multitude of counselors, people I can lean on for advice. And that's absolutely right. We need to be doing that, finding people that can help us. But until recently, I had never really read these verses from the perspective of being the person who can give the help. And we need to read these verses from those perspectives as well. A multitude of counselors is a very good and safe thing. So as we recognize that, there's a need for counselors out there. There's a need for people to give guidance. And we can be those people. These verses show how important that is. Now, I'm not in any way saying you need to go get a degree in counseling or you need to go get professional training. That's not the point. The point is be someone that's approachable. Be someone that can help. Be someone that's willing to share and give advice. That's what these verses show me. And again, we can all do this to different degrees. Now, ultimately, let's go to Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11. I want to finish by looking at these verses. Because this shows us ultimately who is the person to go to for advice and who is our example when we think about being the kind of person that is approachable and willing to help. And of course, the one that fits both of those pictures is Jesus. Jesus is our ultimate example in providing help and our ultimate example in being the kind of person that others can turn to. Matthew chapter 11, this is a very familiar passage to most of us, I think. Verse 28, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." So as we talk about this idea of being someone that others can turn to, ultimately Jesus is the one that fits that position. We understand that humans have weaknesses. At some point, humans can't help us with everything. We need to realize that Jesus is always there to turn to. Jesus is always there to give us rest. This is a very comforting verse. And if we focus on verse 28, anyone that is laboring, anyone that has a burden, they can find rest in Jesus. And what a comforting picture that is. But then Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." But Jesus just said, "I'll give you rest." But then in verse 29, he says, "I'll put you to work." Because a yoke is the idea of working, of doing something. So Jesus says he's going to give us rest and he's going to put us to work. How do those ideas work? How do those go together? Jesus says, "I will give you rest." In verse 29, he says he's going to give us a purpose. Jesus isn't going to give us rest by letting us sit on the couch and do nothing. Jesus provides rest and comfort for us by putting us into a more important work. We take Jesus' work upon us. We take the work of sharing the gospel and supporting others and helping Christians. That is where rest is. That is the yoke that Jesus gives to us. And in comparison, Jesus' yoke, his rest, is easy. It's light. Because that's where fulfillment is. That's where hope is. We have something to look forward to. We have a goal as we work for God. So Jesus is the ultimate example. He provides rest by putting us to work in his kingdom, by giving us things to do. And ultimately, the rest that Jesus provides is eternal. And once we get to heaven, there's praising God, and there is being around his throne, and there is serving him. And what a beautiful picture that is, as we think about what rest means in the eternal sense. So Jesus is ultimately the one who is our example and the one for all of us to turn to. So as we follow her's example, it leaves us with some pretty challenging things to do. But it's important that we do this. Her, in Exodus 17 and Exodus 24, he was a godly person. We don't know much about him. We don't know any of his background or anything like that, but he was a godly person. And we need to follow his example in supporting godly people who need support, in being someone who can meet the needs of others, seeing something that needs to be done and being the one who goes and does it. And of course, his example in being someone to turn to is important for each one of us to follow. We need to be like her. We need to follow his example. We need to act in these ways. Being a Christian is what brings us these blessings. As all of us work on these characteristics, as all of us work to become better at each one of these things, and by the way, we're never going to be perfect at it, but as each one of us works at these attributes, we can encourage one another. We can push each other to do better. And that is a tremendous blessing of being a Christian. You need to follow Jesus' example in giving rest. Turn to Jesus. That's where you will find rest. Give your life to God. Become a Christian if you haven't. Jesus will give you rest. And you will get to be around people who are also trying to find rest in Jesus. If you haven't been baptized this afternoon, think very seriously about that. Think about your position with God. Think about your eternal position. Will it be a position of rest or will it be a position of torment? The choice is ours. Jesus gives us that choice. If you haven't been baptized, then think seriously about your condition. If you have been baptized, but you've wandered away from God, you've stopped seeing the needs. You've stopped helping others. You've stopped serving God. You've stopped putting God first. Then get rid of the distraction. That's always because something has come in between us and God. It's blocked that communication. You need to get rid of that distraction. Get rid of whatever it is. If it's something physical, then get rid of it. If it's something that is emotional, then find help. We all need to turn to God. If there's sin in your life, then repent of that. Talk to God. Ask God's forgiveness. If it's something between you and others, go to them for forgiveness. And if it's something public, then ask for the forgiveness of everyone who has been affected by that. If you need help this afternoon, then don't leave without talking to someone, asking for help. And if we can help you in a public way this afternoon, whether you need to be baptized, whether you need to ask for help from the prayer or help or prayers from the congregation, then we can help you this morning. Come to the front as we stand and sing.